Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Traffic congestion is a problem near the Elgibel area, and one developer thinks changing the timing of signals will make a difference.
That's like hiring a planner to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic rather than just doing it yourself.
Meanwhile, in Aspen, one landlord controlling more than a dozen buildings puts local businesses in jeopardy. And that means it's harder to find everyday average supplies like underwear and reasonably priced gasoline.
I actually believe that in Mark Hunt's calculations and in his mind, it really did probably come down to dollars and cents.
And how much can the communities of Garfield County rely on oil and gas business?
But it's also worth pointing out that Garfield County has absolutely no debt.
Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Aspen Times columnist Andy Stone, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Joining me in the studio is Curtis Wackerly and Andy Stone, and I have Randy Essex at the Glenwood Post-Independent on the phone. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
So there's some movement down in the Mid-Valley area.
Actually, not much movement. Everything's come to a grinding halt.
Right. Actually, that's true. So let's start with the traffic issue.
Which has come to a grinding halt. Yeah, traffic in the Mid-Valley is absolutely despicable. I think that's the easiest way to put it. It's really... Since I am a Mid-Valley resident these days, it is really astonishing to see how heavy traffic is there. Even in the middle of the day on a weekday, all four lanes of the highway in both directions are absolutely chock full of traffic backed up in all directions. So it's gotten really bad down there.
When do you think
and
it got bad?
This is only the beginning.
Right.
I did a story back in... a little over a year ago about Highway 82 traffic, and CDOT's projections, which are really just kind of straight line projections, predict at least a 50% gain for that Elgibel-Willits stretch, I think with by 2020. And, you know, people are going to continue, they're going to continue to be more people here. So it does show the importance of an effective bus system and trying to get more people to ride the bus, which we're thinking about now as the bridge construction starts up here.
So is there's a developer down there that is suggesting that they would pay for some improvements to the signals as far as timing goes?
That's like hiring a planner to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic rather than just doing it yourself. I mean, that's pretty trivial stuff.
So the issue is that, or what's been in the paper anyway, is that it's the Fields development. I think they're the ones that put in their proposal that they would help pay for CDOT to change how the timing of the lights are. And there's three lights, I think, that are pretty close to each other, right, down there?
Two, anyway.
Well, you have Elgibel,
three,
then you have one at Willits,
yeah,
and there's one just a little bit down at what, Original Road?
There are many lights.
It's easy to miss all of those.
Yeah, I often do, actually. I said there were two, but of course that's because I get so busy cursing at them that I lose count.
So could this possibly be a function of just the timing of traffic signals? I mean, isn't this a function of there's just more people and there's going to be more development down there and this is not going to solve it?
Absolutely. I mean, again, it's in the developer's interest to pretend that changing the timing on the traffic lights will fix all the problems. It'll make things perhaps marginally better for a little while, but as Randy was just saying, the projections are the traffic's going to keep increasing and increasing, and there's just not enough highway there. I mean, right now, forgive me for doing the old-timer thing, but when we first moved down there, which was actually a while ago, that was a two-lane highway where the El Jebel Road comes in. There wasn't a traffic light. There were no traffic lights there. It was just a stop sign. Now the road is seven lanes wide when you count in the turn lanes and acceleration lanes, and there's a traffic light and all sorts of things, and that's not enough. And if we go to 14 lanes wide, maybe we'll get somewhere, but it's just not going to work.
So what's the solution, Andy?
Get out of here.
Yeah. That's the problem. I don't think anyone has found, well, as you were saying, Randy, getting a good bus system, it would be nice. Maybe somebody would consider putting in a light rail system running the length of the valley. That might be cool.
Yeah, has anyone ever thought of that?
I don't think so. I think that would be like a brilliant new idea.
Maybe it's time to resurrect that, because I think one of the issues back in the 90s was there's just the population couldn't support something like that. A people mover to that extent.
Well, of course, now at this point, RAFTA has taken some actions that will make it even more difficult than it was before to put in light rail. They went and tore up and sold all the rails that were actually in place. There were functional rail system that went from Glenwood most of the way up to Aspen, and for reasons that would bear looking into, RAFTA, which had control of it, decided to sell off the rails. So that's all gone now. That adds millions of dollars to the cost of putting in a system.
I think unless there is a significant change in federal transportation policy, that the idea of light rail is not doable. There would have to be, the federal government would have to shift how it feels about light rail and decide to do a rural demonstration project, because the money otherwise just simply is not there.
I don't know what the solution is to Mid-Valley traffic.
Private jetpacks, perhaps.
I think
stay in your homes.
I mean, people have to take the bus. It's the big pressure reliever that is available to us. And, of course, people can bike and so forth, but there are some trips that you can't do on your bike, and only a limited number. We already, our population bikes and walks a heck of a lot more than most of the rest of the country, so that's just trimming around the edges. I mean, I've just been talking with the bridge project people about their dream of reducing traffic by 20% when the bridge is closed up here, and there are a limited number of opportunities, options available to do that.
And, of course, you say the buses, but in fact, and I know you're right, but at the same time, we should, you know, in rush hour these days, the buses are standing room only. So it's going to be hard to get more people to get on the buses when there's not enough room on the bus.
Of course, there's a lot of families that live in that area of the valley. And so how do you ask a mom who's running their children all over the place to take the bus? They got to go to the grocery store. They got to go to the dry cleaner. They got to pick their kid up from soccer. They have to do this. They have to do that.
Yeah, not everybody can do that. I mean, there are some trips that you can take on the bus, mainly going to and from work and maybe some recreational trips. I think that, you know, it is, you folks don't like cars up there and there's limited parking. I mean, I think there are opportunities to park mid-valley, up-valley, and take the bus to go play. But, you know, we're going to live with this. It's a narrow valley with one major road. If they expanded it to six lanes, which their right-of-way and acquisition issues and geology issues, that's not going to happen. Those lanes would fill up, too. You'd just be encouraging more people to drive.
Exactly. So I think we have reached a conclusion here that it's impossible. This problem will not be solved. And let's move on.
Randy, just really quick, just to put this in context, do you remember what the numbers are as far as projection growth of the population?
Can we even say what
is
the population now?
Well, the state demographer says that Garfield County is going to grow 80% in, I think, 15 years. I think that that's high. I don't think that there's any way that we can provide jobs and housing for that many people. But, you know, this is a great place to live, and all of Colorado is going to grow, and we won't be exempt from that.
Do you know what the population is now?
For the Roaring Fork Valley, it's so hard to put a number on that because of all the different jurisdictions and how much of Garfield County do you count? And you get into this philosophical discussion of does silt count? Or
it's impossible.
Yeah, do you have a handle on that, Randy?
I think Garfield County now is around 70,000, and then Pitkin County is around 20,000.
And then how much Eagle, then you have the little
and
slice
then
of Eagle
of course,
County.
Elgeville, yeah.
But then again, Garfield County stretches way past the valley here.
A lot of the folks in Parachute and Rifle work in Basalt and Aspen and Snowmass.
That's true.
And that's a big part of the transportation issue.
Right.
Actually, I think it's interesting when we talk about growth in Garfield County. Gets us over into the some of the problems that are coming up with the gas and oil drilling there, because to some extent, I mean, Garfield County, I believe I was seeing a story that they're running into some problems all of a sudden now with tax revenues are falling because they have tied themselves and their fortunes so directly to the extractive oil and gas industry. And as those monies go away, suddenly the municipalities and the counties are going to start coming up short on meeting their budgets. So again, another problem, as Randy was saying, providing jobs for all those people, providing housing for all those people. And suddenly we may see the economy shrinking.
Yeah, Parachute, which had rejected recreational marijuana, was looked at its sales tax revenue, which dropped off because oil and gas workers have moved or are not buying things. The families are hanging on there, and they now, council members face recall for having approved recreational marijuana, which they contend, look, this is the only way that we can keep the town afloat. Garfield County certainly is dependent on severance taxes and other revenue from gas activity, and the commissioners have cautioned that fiscal 2017 will be the beginning of a tough time that reflects the low gas prices and the lack of drilling activity. But it's also worth pointing out that Garfield County has absolutely no debt. And out of the 3,100 counties in the United States, I think fewer than 5% have no debt. So I don't think the county's going to collapse upon itself.
Although obviously, it's not going to collapse, but there is, now my memory won't give me the year. Maybe somebody here will jump in. But there was, quote unquote, Black Monday when they shut down the Shell Oil projects in over in that part of the state 30 years ago or so, and things really collapsed. I mean, there were in Grand Junction, there were people who were committing suicide because their lives had collapsed because they had gotten overextended by counting on the money that was going to be coming in from shale oil. So
yeah,
it is dangerous to get too deeply in bed with these people.
That was 1982. And I think that the tourism industry is a bigger part of our economy now. Not to say that you're right, it's an issue, but maybe not quite as drastic as some might make it out to be.
Do you think that the Garfield County commissioners think about that kind of stuff when they're siding with the oil and gas companies like they just recently did?
Sure they do. I mean, they want all of the above. They want that gas revenue. They see it as the best and easiest way to have a good, strong budget. And then, they want to diversify the economy as much as possible. I think, when you look at the proposed development at Cattle Creek, one of the questions there is, I mean, both Glenwood Springs and Carbondale are opposed to that development because they believe it's almost a Willits-like development. And they believe that it would just drain sales tax revenue from their community. The Garfield County commissioners might be thinking, there are residences here, there are commercial properties here, we get property tax from that, which helps our budget situation. And that is an approval process that's going to be dealt with starting this month.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. Joining me are Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Aspen Daily News editor Curtis Wackerly, and Aspen Times columnist Andy Stone.
You know, one more thing about Highway 82. When I looked at the traffic numbers for the story that I did, the one of the most comparable state highways in terms of how much traffic is on it is the road between Highway 6 and Boulder, you know, that goes past Golden.
Yeah.
It might be State Highway 93. The number kind of escapes the top of my head. But our traffic is comparable to ex-urban, you know, Metro Denver traffic.
Yep, the greater Roaring Fork Metroplex.
Meanwhile, right. In Aspen, 30,000 cars a day were coming through the S curves in, the Christmas to New Year's week.
That's what I was wondering. I was going to check on that number.
I just got them the other day, and they're up.
It felt like they were up. So their goal is to limit it to what, 23,000? They go over the Castle Creek Bridge.
Yeah, it's
sort of 1993 number.
They do it with an annual average. So, you know, you have some wiggle room to exceed it in the big days, but the 1993 average, annual average daily traffic count is around 24,000, I think. I don't know, I could be wrong there. I need to have the numbers in front of me. We have not exceeded the annual daily average. We're right there.
And again, this raises the question of whether or not Aspen really needs more hotel rooms.
Well, again, it's like if we were... We were at 99% capacity. Basically, we were sold out during the 2 weeks of Christmas and New Year's. Our infrastructure can't handle that amount of people, and I don't think anybody in this valley wants to be 100% sold out.
I mean, I talked to a lot of tourists just on the chairlift or whatnot, and they were like, this is crazy. This is too busy.
Yeah.
You know, they say, I usually come here in February. Why did I change my plans?
Our airport's too small. Our valley's too narrow. Our highway is too. There's only four lanes. We don't have enough restaurants for that kind of capacity.
And again, I mean, I just said it, but I'll say it again. We had a major political campaign just a couple of months ago based on the idea that what we desperately needed in this town were some more hotel rooms. And people were vehemently arguing that Aspen's biggest problem was that it's not big enough. Again, can we all remember next time around?
The context also was, let's think about what our product is in the future. It's not just more hotel rooms, but what kind of hotel rooms?
If our product is an overcrowded town, then we should hurry up and build some more hotel rooms because we're not quite overcrowded enough yet.
Well, since we're on that topic, the Base 2 property, so the majority of the voting population here in Aspen decided that we don't need more lodging, and they turned that project down. And so now what we have is a gas station that has two businesses in it outside of the Conoco, which is a labor force business, and Eco Wash. It's a steam cleaning car detail place. And that business owner has been given the boot by the landlord, Mark Hunt. And the business owner, Mario, suggests that maybe it was politically motivated that he got kicked out, even though he knew it was coming at some point.
He knew it was coming at some point, and he was paying about $1,200 a month to rent a garage out of which he ran his car detailing car wash business, which, you know, that's a pretty good deal to have a business in the downtown core of Aspen. And he had had this deal for a long time. He'd been there since 2008. Along comes Mark Hunt, who buys the property with his, with his investors. And he pays $6 million for it in 2014 for this gas station, on which he proposes the Base 2 hotel that, you know, almost two-thirds of the voters said they were not in favor of that plan. And, so he's going to put another commercial building there someday. But apparently he has decided that day is a ways off. He's going to be sitting on this property. It's going to be a gas station. And he just could not sort of abide by having this, like, way below market rent going on there. You know, he basically said, I paid money for this property and I need to get a return on my investment. And so this car wash business is great, but it's not cutting it for me. So this guy was pretty unceremoniously booted. And I actually believe that in Mark Hunt's, calculations and in his mind, it really did probably come down to dollars and cents. Like, need to get more money. I'm a landlord. This is what I do. We charge rent. Just the timing of it and the way it was handled kind of made you feel like there was some animosity there.
So even if there wasn't, perhaps he could have held off just so it wasn't like the appearances of that.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is this guy got his termination notice, you know, 6 days after a letter was printed that wasn't really critical so much of the landlord, but presented his own ideas for what should happen with this property. You know, I don't know. They say that didn't play into it at all, but it certainly could have been handled in a different way.
Of course, it's an interesting thought. The difference between the $1,200 a month that the tenant is now paying and the $10,000 a month, which Mr. Mm-hmm. Hunt swears he can get for it, is, what's that, a little bit under $100,000, which is roughly as much money as Mr. Hunt threw into the election campaign,
right,
even though he said he knew he wasn't going to win, but he just wanted to go ahead and spend $85,000 on the election anyway. So throwing away $85,000 on an election campaign when he swears he knew he wasn't going to win is trivial, but the difference of mm-hmm. approximately that much in rent is worth mm-hmm. booting out a local tenant from the building. I think it's interesting. I make no judgments here, just noting the math.
And we have another Mark Hunt mystery, right? There's always some sort of mystery going on, which is, what is the next tenant going to be? He's not saying. We're going to love it.
Sounds like, who does that remind you of? I can't tell you what I'm going to do, but it's going to be huge.
Mr. Trump?
Oh, that's the name.
Did he give you any indication of what would take over just one bay of a...
It's both. So the labor force is gone, right? So there's an empty garage bay next to the steam wash place. And so this, whatever this is going to be taking over both of them. My suspicion is that it's going to be a restaurant of some kind.
Next to a gas station.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it works in Crested Butte.
A greasy spoon, you know, over the grease pits.
The gas cafe in Crested Butte, they have great breakfast sandwiches.
What I read in your story was that this business already exists. It's a local business?
That's the story. That's what we're hearing.
Okay.
So it can mean a lot of things.
One of the things I think, you know, beyond all the buildings that Mark owns, which isn't, what, now 12 or 15, mm-hmm. and it's not just Mark, it's these people we don't know out of Chicago or wherever. I think a lot of people are not concerned necessarily about the rebuilding of these buildings, mm-hmm. but what's going in them.
Right. And so, what's going to happen to the local businesses that are there now?
Correct.
You know, the lesson
of this... is a locally serving business.
I think the lesson of this story is that, you know, the landlord, treat you well as long as he doesn't have a better option. And once that better option is there, you have a month's notice. See you later.
And that's kind of the way it's always been, right? The landowner always, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. This is the way it's been since the beginning, right? The people who own the land dictate what happens.
And what we have seen as a result of that, of course, in downtown Aspen is a general clearing out of the locally owned, local serving businesses. That seems to be the direction things are going in. And I guess there will be more of that. As we discussed, Mr. Hunt did his advertising, his sales pitch for the Gap building as that Galena Street was Aspen's Rodeo Drive. And with the Bidwell building at the other end of Galena, apparently he's going to aim for the same kind of handbag museum tenants that are populating the rest of that street. And I'll agree with what you said, Carolyn. I mean, personally, if that building, if the quote-unquote Bidwell building is torn down and rebuilt with something new that goes clear out to the lot lines, if it's not really obnoxious in design, not that it really matters, but I don't care. I mean, I'm not fond of the building that's there right now, and buildings out to the lot lines in downtown are reasonable for that little bit of urban core. But the question of what goes into a building like that on that spot is going to be an interesting sight.
Well, I just wonder where people will go to get cheap pizza and watch the game.
And you still can't buy underwear anywhere in this town. We're back to that again.
Again, it's the programming in these buildings. So people who get their nails done in that Bidwell building, or they go to Rhino's for pizza and bring in their kids there. Kemosabe, the other, whatever other tenants are in there. Where do they go? That's the big question mark, I think. Related to that, so the gas station was sold to Mark Hunt by Mike Hayesfield, right? The Hayesfields own the Conoco mm-hmm. in Aspen, and Locals Corner.
They're in charge of both gas stations right. in Aspen, even though Mark Hunt is now their landlord at the Conoco. But
so
they own the Shell.
Presumably, they're the ones that are dictating the price per gallon, which is far different than what you could get down in Glenwood. Randy, you ran a story that maybe appeared in the Aspen Times first about the disparity between the two different prices, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a Scott Condon Aspen Times story. We tweaked it a little bit, but yeah.
What's the answer to that? Why is it $1.44 difference?
Again, we did a story some months ago talking to national gas pricing experts and folks around here, and the best answer is that this happens at resort areas all over the country. It happens at Cape Cod. It happens around national parks. Gas stations gouge resort people, period. There's no other. It's not that much more expensive to transport gas to Basalt, for example, or on up to Aspen. People are paying a premium for gasoline to go with their views.
I mean, I feel like the gas, it's much higher in Aspen than it is in Glenwood. It's always been much higher in Aspen than it is in Glenwood. The fact that it's down to like a $1.50 or $1.80 a gallon in Glenwood, and it's, you know, what is it, like $3.70 something in Aspen? I mean, $3.70 is actually the lowest it's been in Aspen in quite some time. So I feel like the proportions are still roughly equal to what they've always been. I mean,
yeah.
Am I off there?
No, I think the local papers, you know, they address this once a year and just kind of do a check on it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'd love for somebody to just go directly to the Hayesfield and say, why are you charging almost double to your fellow community members?
And I know the answer to that. I can answer for them. Transportation costs are higher, and I don't really make any money on gasoline anyway.
And is that the truth?
That's what they always say.
I think
what they
an
say
element.
Anywhere in the country when you ask a gas station or a company that runs gas stations about why their prices are where they are.
And it's, you can get away with it, just like you said. You're paying for being in Aspen. It's whatever the market will bear.
And I talked to the manager of one of the El Jebel gas stations who said, look, I pay people more. I mean, Wendy's pays people more, so I have to pay people more. I try to keep my store clean and have a good relationship.
So you can't buy underwear in Aspen. You pay more for gas. And locally serving businesses are going out the door. They're moving down to the Mid-Valley, where there's more traffic congestion.
I'm intrigued by this underwear question. So can you buy underwear in Basalt? I'm trying to think of where you would get your skivvies there.
It's the symbolic gesture of, you know, there's nothing affordable left. You can't buy socks and underwear in Aspen because there's no locally serving businesses because the landlords are jacking up the rent. And
actually, I mean, but I think the true answer is if you want to buy reasonably priced socks and underwear, if that is more acceptable a phrase than underwear, I think you have to go down to Glenwood or get online and buy it from Amazon or directly from one of the suppliers. And they'll deliver it to your mailbox almost immediately. And you don't have to deal with the traffic and you don't have to deal with the cost of gas. And that's where the economy and the world is going in the future. But maybe we'll talk about that another day. Again, when we talk about the underwear thing, that is a long-going discussion because it was for years and years there was nowhere to buy underwear in Aspen. And then Gap came in and suddenly there was a place and now Gap is gone and there isn't a place. And it's just a market indicator.
What's the daily underwear index at in Aspen right now versus Glenwood? I bet it's a lot lower in Glenwood.
Well, on that note, I think I'll end it here. thanks for taking the time.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Aspen Times columnist Andy Stone, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.